Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So you have a question before you, right? Are you going to charge those least able to afford it the most in the increases? We've heard 100%. We've heard 200%. I've heard so many numbers, I can't even keep straight what it is. But whatever it is, it's wrong. Thank you very much.
That from the sometimes raucous public hearing last night at the New York Hilton, where the public got to talk back to the leaders of the MTA. Now, each month we have a featured guest who joins us every Thursday on this program. This month, our featured guest is the president and CEO of the MTA, Lee Sander. The MTA, caught in the financial crisis, like everyone else, as we've heard, is trying to stave off draconian fare hikes and service cuts for later this year, including the elimination of two subway lines and more bus routes. They've been appealing mostly to the state of New York for more funding, especially with those Eastern Harlem River bridge tolls and the payroll tax on businesses in the MTA service area that we've talked about. Last week, we talked mostly about the financing. This week, we'll talk mostly about how the MTA is run. We've been collecting your questions all this month at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take a few phone calls as well at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Lee Sander, thanks so much again for doing this, and welcome back to WNYC.
Happy to be with you, Brian.
Did you get the sense at the hearing last night, first of all, that people like in that clip we played were angry at you or rallying with you for the funding that you're looking for?
No, I didn't get the sense, nor do I think the other board members feel that was personal anger. I think it was just, you know, people being upset with the prospect of draconian fare increases and significant service cuts. In fact, you know, a number of legislators who testified also were very clear that this was not really aimed at the board, but rather that the onus was on them. We had Senators Perkins, Senator Squadron, Assemblywoman Rosenthal, a number, I don't want to leave some folks out, but there were others as well, who were very clear in their testimony that this was really Albany's responsibility. There were some politicians who didn't quite make that point, but they will get left unmentioned.
Just to answer the question that got left on the table with Andrea, maybe you were listening to the end of that, with this federal stimulus money getting put on the table any day now, is this also potentially usable to save the fare, or at least keep the fare hike and service cuts as small as possible? And in a sense, are the city and the state and maybe even the MTA competing against each other in Washington for the same pot of gold?
Well, the major funding is capital funding, and nationally, what the Obama administration-to-be, Congressman Oberstar, Senator Schumer, have been talking about is a pot of about $12 to $20 billion. And New York would see, theoretically, somewhere between $1.5 to $3, $4 billion in that range. And that certainly is helpful in terms of dealing with our $25 to $30 billion capital program, the funding that we need for our next program that size. We need that by the end of this year. So it certainly would be helpful. In terms of diminishing the fare increase, these funds basically are not designed for that. There was some discussion about having a small pot of money to offset the high increase in fuel. That has not occurred. But, you know, really the money that we're talking about would have some benefit in dealing with the deficit we have for our capital budget, but it wouldn't be more than you know, a percentage of it. Most of that money, unfortunately, will have to come from Albany as well.
Well, let's spend most of our time today talking about how the MTA is run. Andrea mentioned the skepticism factor that makes it harder for you to get things like East River and Harlem River bridge tolls to expand bus rapid transit because people are so skeptical about how well the money is going to be used. And let's start with a phone call. Andrea in Kew Gardens, you're on WNYC with Elliot Sander. Hello.
Hi, thank you, Brian. As always, a great topic and a great show.
Thank you.
The skepticism rises because the MTA has proven again and again to squander money, that they have double bookkeeping. And question is, do you continue to have things such as housing allowances for executives who live in New York City?
Do you have housing allowances for executives who live in New York City?
Yeah, we for the most senior executives that has been built into the compensation, which is all public in terms of the total compensation. So I receive a housing allowance, and a couple of the agency presidents do. It represents range in about 10 to 20% of the total compensation. But when you look at that compensation, I don't really want to talk about mine because I think that that's self-interested and not good form, I think, to talk about one's own. But, you know, happy to talk about the agency presidents. The compensation for the president of New York City Transit is well below what others make who are running transit properties much smaller than what Howard Roberts rate. He gets compensated much less than the person running the Washington Metro, Los Angeles, and so comparatively speaking, we are on the low end when you factor in size, and our ability to recruit people who can manage this unbelievably large, unbelievably complex organization is already, you know, a little bit an issue. I think we have great people, but you have to look at the total compensation of which housing allowance is a part, and then see how we pay compared to the rest of the country.
And I am going to ask about your own compensation because it's been in the news and with some disgruntlement, raised recently, I believe, to $300,000.
No. I think I actually made a decision to forego the increase that I'm contractually allowed to that is due to me by contract.
Okay.
This year. So I forego that. But you know, what occurred in terms of last year when I took a $10,000 raise, that was part of the compensation that I negotiated with Governor Spitzer when I left the private sector to come back to the public sector. That had been a discussion that, you know, occurred when I made the decision to leave, and that's why that occurred at that time. But again, being sensitive to, you know, the political needs of the institution, the importance of our conversation with Albany, with the public, you know, certainly didn't take me long to decide that I was not going to take the increase for this year, and also to ask my agency presidents to defer theirs.
Some people want you to go further. This question from our webpage: are Mr. Sander and his top echelon willing to accept real pay cuts to help finance the deficit?
You know, again, I took a significant pay cut to come back to the MTA. But to and that's, you know, those are individual decisions that people made. My commitment to public service is very strong, and that's why I did that. But again, I am really concerned about New York, you know, the government's competitiveness in getting people to stay in government, not go to the private sector. And while certainly right now the private sector is hurting, and there may be less options for other people in the long term to take significant pay cuts, as I did, in the long term, to build that into the salary structure, I think what will occur is that we will lose the best talent to places like Washington and Los Angeles and Chicago. So I think that the right balance is to do what we did here, which is to forego the increases that were scheduled for this year. And I think that that's, you know, that's an appropriate thing to do.
Mark in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Lee Sander. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thank you.
Sure.
I want to bring two things to the attention. First of all, I live at the Pelham Parkway section in the Bronx. When they started remodeling our station, it ran 2 to 3 years over and about $30 million, I believe, over in costs. The other problem that we have with it is that in 91, 92, we were promised an intercom system on the platform. There are days when we stand out there, it's an outside station, freezing. And you go down and ask the token clerk why there is no intercom system, why nobody's told anything. She just holds the intercom, and it's still not working, almost 20 years later.
So your question is about waste?
Project? Totally waste. They waste constantly. And I have a suggestion. If Mr. Sanders says that we've got the best talent, then they should leave and we should find better talent, because it's a disgrace. I know Mr. Sanders had personally said that he takes a limo. The reason he drives, he gets driven around, is because there's places where transit doesn't go to. So what does that do to the everyday folks that don't have access to go?
Mark, thank you very much. And I'm sure you're suffering slings and arrows like this at all your public hearings. But what about the question of waste? There is that widespread perception that projects take a long time, that there's a lot of waste in the system, that projects that are in the pipeline don't even get done well, as at least is Mark's perception at Pelham Parkway.
Yeah, but first I'd like to talk about my limousine, Brian.
Sure.
I should not have a limousine. We have a Chevy, which I use generally on average once a week when I'm going. I live in Queens, and when I do my field visits, which I tend to do about 6 o'clock in the morning, and they're in outer locations, that's where I will be driven. Oh, then from there, I take the subway in. So I generally take the subway, I take the commuter rail, and I change I take the subway and then change to Long Island Railroad. But, I use the car maybe 5% of my trips. And, again, it would make no sense if I'm going to be on the number 2 line or number 5 line, which I've been on last week, to be there at 6:30 in the morning. I would have to leave, I think, my house at 4:30 in the morning. Just don't think that's a productive use of my time.
It was in the Daily News with some derision that you're driven around by a 6-figure salary cop. Six figures for the driver?
Yeah, with overtime, and again, that is that is the compensation of folks in that level, and they actually are making less than my understanding of in terms of the expenditure for those individuals under Chairman Calico. So, the reason that we have police officers is because I've had death threats, and that's why that decision was made. There were assassination attempts, as you may have seen in some of the press, against predecessors in my position, and that's why a decision's been made to have police coverage.
Don't
use it all the time, but sometimes we do. So yes,
To take it off you and focus back on the system. Again, quoting from a Daily News article, this time from July 23rd, mm-hmm. It says the MTA plans on cutting hundreds of positions from its budget, but not one suit at authority headquarters apparently is expendable. MTA headquarters, the division at the top of the food chain, wouldn't lose one executive according to the preliminary budget, while the 2009 budget does trim about 500 other positions, mostly from the New York City Transit, Bus, and Subway division. Is that the final version of the budget?
No, I mean, that was, occasionally this may come as a shock, but reporters get things wrong, and we are cutting the staff at 347 at MTA headquarters by 5% in the same way as we are as we're doing the agencies. We're cutting our managers between 5 to 10% in the agencies, including MTA administration, and that's just wrong. We are doing it by attrition because we prefer not to fire people. That's across the board. You try and do that stuff by attrition and eliminating headcount, but that's just dead wrong. Most of the time the media gets it right, but occasionally that's wrong. That's just flat out wrong.
Okay.
Let me get back to the issue of waste. First, I think it's important to put this in perspective. The MTA is performing at a level that is far superior than it did in the 70s and 80s, and that's because, in general, overall, we have spent the money wisely. Now, when you're dealing with an $11 billion operating budget, a $21 billion capital budget, there are individual projects that some have gone amazingly well, like when we rebuilt the 1 and 9 line after the World Trade Center attack. I can mention other examples that have been brilliant. Certainly, there are projects where they have not gone well. But that's why the Ravitch Commission, that's why Assemblyman Brodsky, who's been as strong a critic as any in terms of the MTA, that's why Gene Rushinoff, any of the folks who've really followed the MTA, I think would respectfully frankly disagree with a previous caller in terms of can the MTA spend the money wisely? Has it done well? There is no argument when you deal with an organization of this magnitude, and you show me any large organization this size that doesn't make mistakes. They're run by human beings. They have human beings, and so there's fallibility. But you have to look at the overall track record. One of the reasons, if I just may, Brian, one of the reasons why, I have had an agenda of about seven priorities. One of them is institutional transformation. Key component of that is general managers, and we have done this transformational change, putting the individual subway lines under one individual. And one of the reasons why they are there is to help deal with some of the issues that were described on the Pelham line, intercom. Before, there was no accountability in the subway system to gain closure on issues like these. And I think over the long term, you will begin to see improvement. And in fact, we have seen that. And the system is operating better than it ever has on the commuter rail lines. The best on-time performance in the history of Long Island Railroad. Later this week, next week, we're going to announce some stuff on Metro North the same. And in terms of subways, if it wasn't for the fact our ridership has increased by 50% over 12 years, if we didn't have this massive overcrowding and the rebuilding of the track, otherwise the mechanical reliability of the subways is extraordinary. So it's got to be put in that context.
And some figures that I read in the Downtown Express from your office that you, since taking over in 2007, say you've reduced back office costs by 40%, cut the staff from 620 to 380 people. The MTA has kept its costs roughly in sync with inflation. So you sound extremely frustrated with the widespread public perception. And I'm guessing with the Daily News, because as I search articles on this, it's the Daily News time and time again that kind of perpetuates the perception that there's bloat at the MTA. How frustrated are you with that news outlet in particular and with this public perception, which you clearly think is inaccurate?
Well, it was interesting. When I testified in front of Chairman Brodsky last month, at the end of it, he said, "I have one major criticism of you. And that is that the agency has not gotten enough credit for what it has accomplished." Now, it's not, I think, good form for me to talk about, we haven't got enough credit, sound like we're crying, But I just want to invoke, again, people like Richard and Gene and others for what they have said. Am I frustrated? No. I mean, actually, personally, I'm not. It's just that I need to, as we are looking for the support from Albany, I think it is important to convey to New Yorkers that they need to put this in context. So I don't have personal frustration. Genuinely, I've been around for a long time. I spent 20 years in the public sector. So it kind of goes with the territory. But in terms of public policy, which is what your show is about, it is it's just a little frustrating in terms of conveying to the public, but I don't feel personally frustrated.
We have about a minute and a half left. I'm going to throw in one more.
And by the way, the Daily News has not been bad. Pete Donahue is our beat reporter. Uh-huh. In general, I think it's been pretty consistent, but some of the headlines, I take the $10,000 pay cut, and the headline is, Sander gets by on $275,000, but that's the media.
Julia Vitullo-Martin from the Manhattan Institute, writing an op-ed in the Daily News, said you should be more transparent about the amount of property that the MTA owns, that there's 14,000 buildings, according to Brooklyn Councilman David Yasky, worth more than $1 billion. In hard times, sometimes governments and public authorities sell real estate, but you won't give an accounting. And we have a commenter on our webpage who asks if you would consider an independent auditor as existed for the MTA during the Cuomo administration. I'm not sure if that history is accurate. So take our last 30 seconds and answer those two questions.
That's a lot to respond to. David wants us to turn over J Street and Mari Markowitz, the facility we have there. We are very interested in moving our property. That's a longer conversation. A lot of it we don't own. It's owned by the city of New York. In terms of auditing, our books are on our website. I think, again, Ravitch and others have recognized that we are now extremely transparent. And what was that last arrow,
auditor?
Brian?
10 seconds, an auditor, independent auditor?
I think we have the same governance. I oversaw the transit division, so I think it's the same thing we have in MTA, an independent MTAIG. But we work very closely with the state controller, who is independent, audits everything we do.
And to be continued. Elliot Sander, thank you again for making your case.
Thank you, Brian.
And we'll talk to you next Thursday. Elliot Sander coming on with us every Thursday this month to talk about the MTA.